Welcome to the Bailiwick Express podcast. This is The Interview, one in a series of podcasts where we at the Bailiwick Express speak to members of our community about events, personal stories, politics, current events or charitable initiatives. Thank you for joining us.
The story starts probably over 30 years ago, before I was born, just as I was being born. A relative of my mum got diagnosed with breast cancer at 27. She was the youngest at that time in Guernsey to be diagnosed. Yeah. At that time, the Southampton and Cancer Research was sort of beginning its research into genetics, and they asked my auntie if she would give a sample of her tissue to be tested. It was then that they identified that she carries this BRCA gene mutation. They asked if anyone else in the family would want to be tested. I believe a handful of people got tested back then. And then over the last 30 years, more and more people have been taking this BRCA test, which is just a blood test. My mum had hers in, I think she said it was 1995, I think. And she kind of told us that there was this gene in the family, that she had it, which made her more likely to get cancer, not 100% that you're going to get it, but increases your chance. So she just made us aware of this so that we could tell doctors or anything, if anything was to ever happen to us. And then it was after the birth of my second child, when I decided that was it for my family. I went to the doctor for my postnatal checkup and they started talking about contraception. And then she went, I realised that you have a BRCA family. Have you ever thought about getting tested? And I thought, actually, why you say it? Let's do it, because I don't see the reason why not. So yeah, that was in, my daughter's born September 2019, so that was November 2019. I decided that I was gonna get tested. So you get referred to the breast clinic, and when I walked in, they're like, we know your family, but fill out this family history form still. So that was quite funny. So that was March 2020, COVID came along. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't go away to be tested. So I spoke to the clinic in Southampton and they agreed that they would treat me as if I was a carrier, given my strong family history, and agreed that I could just go in the screening program now. So I was 30, I think I was 32 then. And I didn't have a first screening until November 2020. So this is like a whole year after I started the process. And unbeknown to me, in that screening in November 2020, they found something. In January 2021, they asked me to come back for another MRI. Again, they hadn't told me they'd found anything. I think from what I understand now is the location and where it was and the size, they were like, is this an abnormality? Let's test you again, see if it's there or not. So they tested me again and it was still there. So in May 2021, they asked me to come for an ultrasound. And that's when they told me that they found something. Which was a shock because I hadn't been told anything before. So I was there on my own. I remember I was up at the clinic on my own, just told my husband I'd be 10 minutes and phoned him up in absolute tears saying that they'd found something. And he's really good. He's like, don't think of it as the worst. It's like, no, but it's scary. Like, I've just been told they found something.
And
in
you were
booth.
By yourself?
I was by myself. And given my family history. So they tried to do a biopsy then. It's where they stick a needle in. So I'm just there in the clinic.
Not expecting this to happen on that day.
So they numb you and then they insert a needle and try and take a biopsy of the lump. That came back as negative. And they later found out that they didn't even get a sample of the lump because of where the location was. So they had to send me off to England for this special MRI guided biopsy. And from what I understand at that time, they'd never sent anyone off the island for this guided biopsy. So they had to try and find a hospital that would take me.
Okay.
So this was May, June 21. They found me a hospital and in July 21, I went to England and had this biopsy. And then 2 weeks later, I got my results, and that's when they told me it was cancer.
Did it feel at the time like things had started moving quicker? Because it sounds like there was such a long gap, obviously because of COVID, from, you know, you first making the, you know, making, having your postnatal checkup and saying you'd like to be assessed and then having your first scans to then having the biopsy, did it feel like things started moving quicker?
I don't know. I think with COVID, I just lost a whole track and sense of time to me. When I talk about it, I'm like, oh my God, it sounds like I'm rambling because it carries on and it's on and on and on. But at the time, I don't know, it just, time just stood still.
Okay.
And then I think when I got told, I said I was expecting it because I thought, why have I gone through all this for it to be nothing?
Yeah.
So I'd prepared myself to hear it, which some people think that's weird. Like I said, when he told me, I did not cry. My mum cried, but that's because she's a Karen. I'm guessing she felt some sense of guilt that she'd passed this on to me. And she's never had breast cancer, my mum. Okay. So it's always that, why you, not me, sort of thing. So I think in the family, there's only four of us, and I'm the most recent. So it was my auntie 30 years ago, and then now it's me.
Yeah.
So there's been no one in that time period. But yeah, I think I just expected it. So if he'd said no, I would have gone, oh, I went through all for that, for nothing. It sounds terrible, but to have gone and experienced all that and then they'd tell me it was something, I just felt like it was for something, it wasn't for nothing, and I had an answer to what it was rather than, oh, it was a nothing.
Yeah.
We'll see you in a few years for another scan.
Was it in Guernsey then that you were told that you did have cancer? So you had your mum with you and
my husband,
So your initial appointment where you'd been told they had previously found something, you were by yourself.
Yeah, because I thought I was literally going to pop in, have a scan and walk out. No.
So this time round you had family support.
I prepared myself,
But what was it actually like? I mean, for them as well, as you said, your mum felt guilty,
I think, yeah.
You were expecting it. I mean, do you know how your husband had gone into that meeting? Was he expecting it?
Yeah, I think he's like me. We very much think the same. And I remember him saying to me, like, oh, you're not going to die. I was like, I'm not dying. Like, I'm not scared. Like, I'm not going to die.
Okay.
I just don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know what the side effects are going to be like.
Yeah.
You're so used to watching these medical dramas of Grey's Anatomy where someone's got cancer and they have chemotherapy and they become really gaunt and they lose their hair. That's what made me cry the most. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my hair. What am I going to look like? Am I going to scare my kids? My daughter was just turning 2 as I got diagnosed. So I was like, am I going to scare them? So that's what my worry, that's what made me cry.
Did you tell your children at the outset what was happening?
My children know I was unwell.
Yeah.
And we just told them that mummy was really poorly.
Okay.
She had to go to hospital and have some medicine in her arm because I had a PICC line inserted in my arm, so that was there all the time. So they saw that. So we just told them that mummy was sick, and unfortunately the medicine was so strong it made mummy's hair fall out. But we've never told them cancer or anything like.
Because the word is scary, isn't it? I mean, we're adults, and it is. I mean, people call it the C word, don't they?
Yeah.
It is a scary
word. We named mine Larry.
Okay.
Larry the lump.
Oh, okay.
Because I think to hear the word cancer and use it in sentences, it just made people, it even like made like just to say it in a family setting, like I didn't want to upset anyone. And like I said, even like today, my children don't know that I had cancer. I'll tell them when they're older. I just for me didn't think it, that they were old enough to really warrant understanding it all, and I didn't want to worry them. I didn't want them to inadvertently go to school and then someone goes, oh, my granddad died of cancer, and then my son comes home crying to me thinking that I'm going to die.
Yeah.
So we decided as a family that we would never tell them until they're older.
So they knew you were very poorly. Mm-hmm. Do they know you're well again now?
Yeah, it's quite funny when my daughter looks at pictures back and she's like, Mummy, you had no hair. You've got long hair now.
Yeah.
Like, so in a way, like, I'm kind of pleased that they don't remember it.
Because she's only, what, 4?
She's 4 now.
Yeah.
I quite like that they might not remember it because
but you've documented it with photographs, presumably because at some point
I will show them
and there will be a story to tell, and you've got an Instagram page, I believe. I think I've seen it in the past about your cancer journey.
It's sort of like my cancer my journey afterwards, because with anybody a life-changing event will change you. So for me, I went to a therapist to deal with the trauma of everything.
Yeah.
And one of the things she recommended was talking about it or journaling. And I took to social media to share my finding myself again after cancer, and hoping that I can help people navigate their way through it and life afterwards, because life is not the same afterwards.
And you're in the clear now, in remission, is that how it's worded?
Apparently they don't like the word remission anymore, because my husband's like, so you're in remission? I'm like, well, they've never technically said that to me.
Okay.
But yeah, I am 2 years clear now.
Okay.
I was officially clear after I had my mastectomy.
Okay.
And that's when they officially declare you as cancer-free, because there is nothing there.
Yeah. So your journey started, your diagnosis was during COVID still.
August 21.
We would have been out of lockdown, but there were still restrictions in place. Was your treatment carried out locally, or did you have to go to the UK for it?
I had all my chemotherapy here, but like you said, COVID was sort of still around, and there were limitations in who could come with me to appointments and sitting with you during your chemo days and things. And then again, because your immune system was down, we were just very conscious of people being around me that went unwell, and we had sanitizer by the door for when people came in, and we had a sign on the door that just said, if you're not well, please don't come, because I would get ill, and also if I caught COVID I couldn't go and have my treatment. So we just tried to
protect you.
I mean, I think because of COVID, it did make it quite lonely sometimes, because I didn't have that freedom to go out, because yes, I was poorly, my immune system was down, but COVID then stopped people coming round, because they'd be like, oh, I've got a little tickle in my throat, I won't come round.
Mm.
Whereas, now I'm quite conscious of it with things now.
I bet, So, I mean, obviously your family support, so your mum was at the initial appointment with you when you were told of the diagnosis. And have you got any siblings?
So I've got a sister and a brother, both younger. Since this whole thing's happened, my sister's gone and got tested.
Okay.
And she's not a carrier.
Okay.
But my brother, he's only 25, I think it is. So he's not right there in the... But boys can get BRCA.
I was just going to ask. So boys can carry the gene and pass it on to...
their children. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not just female. So BRCA increases your chances of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and prostate cancer.
Okay.
So...
And wider support then, COVID made it difficult, but what about your friends and your work colleagues?
Oh, my friends are amazing.
Yeah.
They all came with me to treatment. They were all like fighting everything was going to come. Like, I want to come this week. I was like, it's really boring. I actually get really sick when I was going through it.
Okay.
I'd fall asleep but they all fought to come and spend the day with me, or come and sit in bed with me afterwards. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I realised I've got a lot of people who care.
Yeah. If we go back then 30 years to your aunt and when she was diagnosed, as you said, the charity had only just started its research.
Yeah, I believe it only just started its research into looking at genetics and how genetics play a part in cancer. And that's when they sort of picked up this, there's BRCA1 and BRCA2.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure of the difference.
Okay.
But that's when they picked up that, and then they started looking at if it's hereditary, passed down, and all these things. So... because of that research over 30 years ago, that's how they found my cancer so early. And without that research, my story could be completely different. If they hadn't started it and they hadn't picked up my auntie, I don't think we would know as a family that majority of us carry this gene.
Hmm.
So, the research that they did and are still doing today is incredibly important.
Well, it's life-saving, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, but it costs millions of pounds for the research that's been done so far, and there's much more to do, isn't there? And I know that's what you're keen to kind of encourage people to support, the research and the funding, the fundraising, because it funds the research.
Like I said, the global campaign is they're asking philanthropists for 400 million. Like I said, I doubt anyone over here has just got a spare 100 mil just sat in their bank account. But as an island, we can do so much. We like supporting fundraising events and donating, even if it's a pound here, like it all goes towards that research, which I said helped me, but it will help so many more others.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for generations to come, that's the thing, isn't it? And one fundraising event that's carried out locally, which is organised by a friend of yours then.
Yeah.
So it's the Our Race for Life, which replaced
the
Race for Life that used to happen. And for whatever reason, cancer research stopped holding it here. But a local Race for Life, Our Race for Life, has really established itself. I think, did it raise £30,000 last year?
Yeah,
which is a phenomenal amount of money.
Yeah, for
technically
island.
A small local event.
Yeah.
It's a huge sum of money.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And you're involved with that as well, but your friend the one that brought it back.
Danny's the one who brought it back. She's the one who leads it. She's the she's the figurehead for it. She too is a BRCA carrier.
Okay.
And she has been affected by cancer from her sister, and that's why she knows she's a BRCA carrier.
Right, okay.
She's actually done all preventative surgeries to prevent herself getting cancer, so she's what they call a previver, because she's done everything to survive cancer before it could happen. Cancer is a big thing to her as well. Mm. And I think the reason she brought it back, because the one thing she realised that when she went through it is the community feel and how people want to feel part of something. And it's nice to meet people going through what you're going through and have someone you can actually chat to from a real personal perspective, rather than chatting to somebody like, I was chatting to some people from England for the surgery that I had, because no one over here I knew had it. And you're chatting to people in England whose medical environment is completely different to that over here, and the doctors and the wait times and things like that. So it was an amazing feeling last year. Like, I remember the first year I did it, I'd literally had my surgery 3 months before. So I remember walking it, and it was really emotional. And then last year I spoke, and then this year I hope I'm going to run it.
So it's a 5 kilometre fun run, which people can walk, jog, run,
crawl,
cartwheel, do whatever you like.
So there's a 3K and a 5K route.
Okay.
I believe we're making it more wheelchair accessible and buggy friendly this year. It starts at the KG5 and ultimately works its way up to the park, Summer Park and around, and then back.
Yeah.
I believe Danny's just finalising up the route.
And it's in May?
May the 19th, okay. Sunday the 19th, and it starts at 11 o'clock.
And I think, did you say there were 750 people took
last
part last year?
Yeah.
Which again, for a small community event, is huge. Mm. So there's every chance this year there could be more.
We'd
but
like
everyone's,
it.
Everyone's welcome, obviously. And actually, I think it's good to point out, it's not just for women, is it, this event?
I think that's what historically, when the Race for Life was over here, I think people just thought it was for women, it's for breast cancer and things like that. But it's not, it's for cancer research.
Yeah.
Cancer research looks at all cancers.
Okay.
And like I said, cancer just doesn't affect women, it affects men. So we do, it's now not, when you book a ticket, it's not a female, it's an adult ticket or a child ticket. We don't discriminate against men or female, everyone's welcome.
And does everyone dress up in pink still, or can you wear anything?
Yeah, I just think because the logo of cancer research is pinks and blues and things, most people wear pink. Yeah, it's just a sea of pink. It's lovely.
So you're hoping to run it this year, and your husband, children, mother,
my son,
sister,
wants
anyone
to,
else with you?
My 8-year-old son wants to run it with me, although I he'll probably be faster than me because he's got bundles of energy. I'll probably be like, wait for me.
But again, for people who maybe are unable, or running isn't their thing, it's really just supporting the charity and its research, because none of us know what's in the future, do we?
No.
It could affect
anyone. There is a page where you can sign up, but if you don't want to sign up because you don't want to partake in it that way, you can donate via that page. And again, everything we raise locally goes to cancer research, and predominantly the Southampton Hospital and their research they do. And I know that majority of people in Guernsey will end up at Southampton for part of their treatment. So you're ultimately helping yourself in the future, or a family member, a friend. So,
because as you've experienced then, the genetic research that the charity has funded has...
Yeah.
It's why you're here today, I'm guessing, and why other members of your family and future members of your family are going to survive this.
Yeah, and that they also, two of the drugs that I received as part of my treatment were developed and funded and researched by cancer research.
Yeah.
So it's not just the MRI, the genetic stuff, it's these two drugs that they've developed that I've benefited from as well.
Thank you for listening to The Interview, a Bailiwick Express podcast. If you liked what you heard, please like and subscribe. You can find us on all social media channels, and if you'd like to keep up to date on all the work the Express team does, please sign up to our daily email by visiting gsy.bailiwickexpress.com.